The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
There are 2,000 illegal weed shops, pop-up shops, within the five boroughs of the city of New York. In fact, it's so bad that outside of the 40th Precinct in the Bronx, just one block away, there is an entire bus in which people are inside and they are using it as a portable pot-selling facility. Nothing is done at all. Everybody has said, wait until the state legislature gives us the power to basically padlock these illegal pop-up weed stores and will successfully put them out of business so that the legal weed stores can generate the income through taxes. Well, easier said than done. New state legislation that would allow the padlocking of New York's unlicensed pot shops has wide support, but the state assembly's top Democrats have refused to put the plan in this year's budget. The proposed crackdown is pushed by Kathy Crime Wave Holcomb and Eric Adams, swagger man with no plan. But Speaker of the Assembly, Carl Hastie, has said it won't go into the budget. I don't want it intermingled into the budget, which means he's not going to move on this. Now, think of how ridiculous this is. The way it operates now, the sheriff of New York City, Anthony Miranda, has no enforcement powers. They're basically revenue agents. The only reason they go into the illegal weed shops is to check to see if they're selling unstamped, unlicensed cigarettes that have been illegally transported up from North Carolina. That's the only reason they go into the weed shops. So sometimes people will see the sheriff and the deputy sheriffs going in and seizing contraband, and they're assuming that they're just about ready to padlock the illegal weed shop in their neighborhood. Think again. All they probably did in most instances is go in there, check to see if they're selling legal cigarettes. That means with the tax stamp license on it. And if not, they're taking out the cigarettes, not the pot, not the edibles, not the ancillary products. So let's get it together, New York State. You legalized pot 3 years ago. That was Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, supposedly the recreational use so we could get taxable income. The taxable income is not there. The illegal weed shops keep growing, and the politicians just keep making excuses and probably doing puff puff pass after hours.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
Subway crime, subway crime, subway crime. That's in the news, and rightfully so. It's not a perception of crime, it's real. Elected officials, the mayor, Kathy Crime Wave Holcomb, and Eric Adams, swagger man with no plan. Look at this. Half of the attacks against the MTA money-taking agency staff. That means the motormen, the conductors, the maintenance workers, the track workers, the token booth clerks are being committed by those who are emotionally disturbed with lengthy rap sheets. So even when they are caught and taken for a psychiatric observation, let's say the Jacoby Hospital in the Bronx or a Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn, that's it. 72 hours later, they're back to living in the subway system, becoming a threat to themselves and everyone else, and getting arrested over and over and over in a turnstile system of criminal justice. But just imagine the psychological problems that these MTA money-taking agency workers must go through when knowing that there's nothing that is being done to prevent any of these attacks. Now let's look at our mental health facilities. When Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, was still riding high in the executive mansion in Albany, he had 30,000 beds set aside statewide for those who were emotionally disturbed. By the time he exited stage left, fearing indictment, and Kathy Crime Wave Holcomb replaced him, they were down to 3,000 beds as part of his cost-cutting measures. Every day in this city, I pass state-owned psychiatric facilities, the biggest one being Creedmoor. The state had no problem, along with the city, putting tents up there. 1,000 single able-bodied young men with nothing to do and nowhere to go that had become a horrible problem in that particular community right on the border with Nassau County. Well, they're in the tents, but then when you actually go into the brick-and-mortar facilities, it is a state facility, Creedmoor. It does deal with the severely psychiatrically impaired individuals, but it's also a place where you can get care and eventually get discharged and live a normal life. But only 30% of the beds are occupied. So we have so many of our emotionally disturbed walking around like zombies in Dawn of the Dead. They live in the subways, they live in the streets, they live in the parks. And you're telling me there's no room in these mental health care facilities run by Kathy Crimewave Holcomb? Think again. Only 30% occupancy, 70% vacancy. Put them in the state-run hospitals.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
Welcome to Gotham City. Let me take you down to the armpit of the cesspool of crime, subways. Yes, yeah, subways are rocking and shocking the confidence of the strap hanger to continue to pay the fare, or in many instances not pay the fare. 20% of those who ride the subway don't pay. 40% of those who ride the city buses don't pay. But let me not digress. The problem here is that about the only thing you don't see on a subway of late is flamethrowers. But there are two guys out there who are throwing Molotov cocktails, and they're predicate offenders. What it is they're emotionally disturbed. They imagine, because they're psychiatrically impaired, and they think that the strap hangers, the commuters, are a threat to them. So what they do is they'll try to set huge amounts of trash on fire. They'll sort of create a Molotov cocktail, and then they start throwing it at the passengers, whether in the moving subway trains or there on stations along 8th Avenue in the Chelsea section in Lower Manhattan. Now, they've been arrested before. They have huge rap sheets, but they keep being put out into society again and again and again. The fire marshals who investigate many of these fires that are created by these Molotov cocktails have said time and time again, how come they're cut loose? How come they're not sent for a psychiatric observation or maybe committed to get some mental health care, or most importantly, reined in terms of the damage they're doing to themselves and everyone else in the subways and the streets and the parks of New York City? Imagine, we're at the point now where we have two individuals out there on a regular basis who are making quasi-Molotov cocktails. You would think that they were part of some insurgency. No, they're just emotionally disturbed. What are the cops to do? Are they to hermetically seal themselves into their police uniforms? Are they to wear asbestos-lined clothing? Enough is enough. Remove the emotionally disturbed, house them in mental health care units run by Kathy Crimewave Holcomb, who has a vacancy rate in which sometimes 70% of the beds statewide are empty. Fill them up with needy mental health care patients. The space is there. We're paying the taxes. Cure them.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
You say performance guideline, and I say quotas. It affects uniformed police departments all throughout our tri-state area. Time and time again, local counties, villages, townships, the state police, and the local municipal police are used as revenue agents, particularly towards the end of the month. The sergeant will come and say, one moving violation, one parking ticket will keep me away. And if not, I'll have you sit on the corner and write ticket after ticket after ticket after ticket. And then you say to yourself, that's not why I'm a cop. I'm not here to write tickets, write summonses. I'll do it when I have to do it. But I'm here to fight crime. And that brings us to a case where a New York cop claims he was fired for writing a traffic ticket to a lawyer who flashed a PBA card to try to dodge the fine. How many times have we seen police officers, whether retired or active, give friends and relatives those stupid PBA cards? And people immediately pull them out and flash them. Sometimes they put it right there in the window. The cops pull them over. Right away, they pull out the PBA card. Right away, they'll put the PBA card on the seat next to the wallet and act as if, whoa, wow, look at what fell out of my pocket. My PBA card. I don't understand how organized police will allow for the distribution of PBA cards to non-members. What I'm talking about is active police officers should have them. Those who are retired should have them. But citizens should not have a PBA card. Citizens are not members of the Police Benevolent Association. I know it's done as a favor, and it's expected that you will give a common courtesy to a citizen if they do have a PBA card, the same way you would to a police officer. But enough is enough. It leads to corrupted practices. Here is a group of people who don't have PBA cards. They don't know cops. They don't know how to climb the ladder and get PBA cards that they relish. The general public wants to have PBA cards. Why? Because they figure the moment that a cop pulls me over, the moment that a cop cites me for a violation, or they're going to write me up, when they see the PBA card, oftentimes it's like the kryptonite that causes Superman to lose his superpowers and become just simply Clark Kent. Eliminate the PBA cards for non-members and non-retirees. Citizens should not be given them as a present to act as a deterrent to get written up by cops who are on the job.